We're doing the Sefer Amidot. We're up to page Kuf Pei Hei. We're up to the middle paragraph, and we're in the middle of the middle paragraph. And the Magen Midivna had spent the last 10 pages giving us multiple arguments why we should not be infatuated with this world. And he gave us some classical arguments. He gave us some original arguments. And he concludes and speaks to himself, which is always a nice way to give Musar. He says, I speak to you, my soul, why go down this tight path, this path filled with thorns? Choose the path of the king. Go down a path that has no limits, because the path of Hashem is a path that has the streams of Eden. It is limitless. And we're up to the middle of the middle paragraph on page Kuf Pei Hei, v'imifatucha rayonecha. And if you find your thoughts seducing you, لِمَلْأَوْتْ مَخْصُورِخَا بَعْلَمَ הזה, to go down the path, the physical, the material path, the path of desire, let me get what I want, let me get what I need in this world, تَشِيبْ لَهِمْ, so then you should answer those thoughts, هَلَوْ يُتَرْ أَرْوِيَخْ كَاشَوْ لَا أَتْخِيلْ لِمَلْأَوْتَ חסרון, I will accomplish more if I don't even begin to try to fulfill what I'm lacking. Ki kasher atchil lidchot ma'alai chesron echad, because if I want to address one need, so then pen yobe v'yifrotz ha'chesron yoter v'yoter. It could be that as I try to fill that hole, suddenly the hole gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I don't know if you guys ever had that. You have a little string sticking out of your jacket or something, and you pull, and suddenly you have a much bigger string, and you have a bigger problem. And he explained previously how this works. And I owe you the story of Van Vu, Mr. Van Vu. I owe you the story of the millionaire, the multimillionaire four times over from South Korea, Mr. Van Vu. I have to remember to bring you a copy of that. The brilliance of how he applied this concept of the Sefer HaMidot to become a multimillionaire. כמו שהיה בפרו הרשע, ברצותו לדחות מעליו הצפרדע, היכו אותה. A nice example of this we see in the Bible, when Pharaoh wanted to get rid of the frog, so in the plague of the frogs, the Torah describes, ותעל הצפרדע, the frog arose out of the Nile, and then ultimately encompassed all of the land of Egypt. So there are two opinions in the Medrash. One opinion says, "Komram zichonam libracha b'midrash," as they say in the Medrash, "Tani Rabbi Akiva." Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion, "Tzefardea achat hayeta," that only one frog came out of the Nile. "Vayu amitzrim makimota," and every time the Egyptians would beat it, this mammoth frog came out of the Nile. This huge frog starts pouncing around Egypt. So the Egyptians picked up their sticks, they started hitting it, and every time they hit it, v'yishritz ha-tzifardim arbeh. So a whole bunch of little frogs would come out of the big frog. Ken, the same thing happens, im titchem alecha chesron echad, if you try to overcome one need, yetzu lemulo kama chesronot, suddenly you'll find you have so many other needs. V'cha nizkar? You buy a computer, suddenly you need a computer case. Suddenly you need that special rag to wipe off the screen. Suddenly you need the stickers on the keys to have Hebrew. Suddenly you need the Kensington lock. Suddenly you need wireless. Suddenly you need a LAN connection in case you have one and a secure connection. The needs keep growing. You thought you only needed one thing. You get one thing and suddenly I need so much more. I need a microphone to be able to talk on Skype. I need to get a membership at the different song. I don't know, I don't remember the names of the iTunes, whatever it is. The needs just grow. You thought you only had one, and suddenly you have so many. וכל הדברים האלה אשר אמרנו, לא אמרתי רק אל יונה פותה אין לב, אין לב לו להעמיק בחוכמה. And you know what? I went on and on, says the Magen Midivna. And he really did. He went off on a tangent. He said, there are three types of love. We'll describe the fool's love. And once we've touched on the fool's love, so let me tell you how to overcome it. We'll go off on a tangent. And he spent about 15 pages talking about how a fool loves this world and how to overcome it. And he says, you know, I only had to talk and say all these things to a person that's really lacks his own intelligence. And lev lo la'amik b'chokhma u'lavin lachkor tachlit kol davar. People who don't have it within them to understand where life is headed, what the essence of life is. So he needs the balm that we've described to cure his wound a little bit. So then that'll help him open his eyes and he'll see what he's purchasing and what the worth of what he's aspiring for really is. He'll see what his Yetzer Hara is really trying to get him into. Ultimately, he's trying to bring around his demise. And now, we've turned to page Kuf Pei Vav. He says, now he'll have the understanding, he'll have the experience to know that it's all a plot, there's a ploy. They're trying to con you into thinking you only need this or that, but really, it's a con. But anyone who's smart enough, his own intellect, his own understanding will tell him that all of the pleasures of this world, all the amenities, all of the honors, they are all vain. They're false. And it's fantastic if you think about it. One of the great challenges that every person has is this. We like to be deceived. And I'll tell you a scary example. I'm not going to do to you what I did to a crowd earlier today. There were a group of young men who challenged me. They were all very, very riled up. And they said, what's wrong with having internet on your cell phone? And what's wrong with having an iPhone? And what's wrong with having the internet in general? What's wrong? It's a good tool. So they were young and hot, and they're Torah observant young men. So I said to them, I'm willing to answer you. It turns out I didn't know this, but they had asked their teachers this question earlier in the day, and they got different answers. I said, I'm willing to answer you, but on the condition that you forgive me, that I'm going to embarrass you. So they said, fine. So I said, okay. So I said, and I don't want to embarrass you in front of your teachers, so I want to ask the teachers to leave the auditorium. So all the teachers walked out. They said, no, we want to see them. But I said, no, it's not fair. I want you guys to leave. So all the teachers walk out. So I said, okay. Now I'm going to turn around because I don't want to look you in the eye when I'm going to ask you this question. I said, first, you know, this isn't the first time we're talking. Of course, I agree with you that a phone is a tool and the internet is a tool. And there's no question that a tool isn't evil. A tool is, the question is what you do with it. For example, if you ask me, is TV evil? So I'll tell you, you could do positive things. You could give a shear across the TV. You could do a million things. But you tell me, is there one kosher channel? If you have a TV but there's no kosher channel, so then the idea that theoretically the TV could be a kosher instrument, that's not too relevant. It's a theory. So you'll agree with me that just because something's a tool and theoretically it could be used for the positive, that doesn't mean that we should remain stuck in the theory. There is a practical world we live in. So I said, okay, so I'm willing to concede that that the internet is a tool and the iPhone is a tool and having internet on your phone is a tool and it's not intrinsically bad. But, and then I turned around, I didn't face the crowd. I said, but there is one question which I don't even want your answer to, but I'm willing to doubt. Let me just ask you, is there any one of you who could say that you haven't seen improper things on your cell phone? And I know none of you could raise your hands honestly, so that's why I don't want to look you in the face when you do it. Silence. Turn back to face the crowd, no one's talking. I said, okay, so why are we playing games? Yeah, theoretically, the internet's a positive thing. I said, I didn't want to embarrass you more than I already did. But the truth is that because you're giving me such a hard time, that after a few seconds that they calmed down, they tried to find other angles. So I said, wait, I don't want to embarrass you more than that. But the real question that I should ask you is there anyone among you who can say they haven't seen improper things this past month or this past week? And I'm not sure any of you could raise your hands, but I don't want to put you on the spot. So let's not go down that road, but let's ask ourselves a question. If this is so prevalent, And we're all human, so that's it's normal that human beings have desires. Yet if we'd sit here and have a conversation, so none of them came to me and said, we want to have internet on our cell phones because we want to see improper things. They all came and said, come on, there's so many good things on the internet. You got to get your bus route. You got to find out your emails, stay in touch with your friends. So that means that deep down inside, every one of them knew that it's not right. And yet, as much as we know the truth, we could see beyond, if you'll ask me intelligently for when I'm not in the moment of desire, I could answer you intelligently. But when I'm faced with that moment where it's my desire versus my intellect, so somehow my intellect doesn't always win. Tells us the Magen Midovna, if we'd really look at the world honestly, we'd realize how much falsehood there is in the pleasures of the world. Ask any one guy, do you really want to reach next Yom Kippur and know that you did this? No. But the world has a way of seducing us, and there's a lie that we like. We like that lie. The Pasuk says in Mishle, Tov marei naim me'alach nafesh. The Gemara in Yuma explains that what we see and what we imagine is better than the thing itself. We like that imagination. We like the fact that we could go into fantasy land. We like the idea that there's this lie that we could live the lie. So sometimes it's an innocent lie. You take a good fiction book. I don't know, I never read Harry Potter. I have no clue what it says in that book. But I know it's a big fat book that people like to sit and read throughout the Shabbos. You're in a different world. You're not here. And I assume, I don't know anything about the book. Again, I've never read one page of Harry Potter. I'm not sure that's a compliment. Maybe I should know what everyone's talking about. I don't know. But I'm not interested. You have to be at least interested. So I assume there's nothing evil about it. I don't know. But if there's nothing evil about it, so then sometimes it's okay to go off into... it's okay, we do need that. But we have to realize that we're going off into fantasy land. And what the Magen Midovna is telling us at the conclusion of the chapter is that an intelligent person can look at the world and realize that the pleasures of the world, you put them all together, there's a fantasy, there's a lie there. That's not the essence of life. That's not the point of life. It's good things in life. He's not saying that you should be ascetic. He's not saying you should deprive yourself of all pleasures. He's saying that shouldn't be the focus of life. If that becomes the focus of life, then you're being taken in by the lie. And that's the lie that the media keeps pushing. This is the life. Bermuda shorts, a Cuban cigar, a martini, and you're sitting out in the sun. No, that's not the life. Yeah. Agreed.
And then you get a load of extreme people in religious circles that maybe don't really know that much.
I agree that people could take every concept to the extreme, and people do. And they think that's called being holy. I agree. I definitely agree that people could take this too far.
And your example of the internet, is that because they restrict the internet here and you're trying to justify it? Because the Messiah is being contacted by email, and I need my email.
Every night I offer it to you, Mike. Every night.
But I'm not allowed in there without a teacher there.
Well, Mishrad Apnim takes 1 minute. What can I do? It's not my office.
Yeah.
There were years that I'd come home at more sane hours, and then I'd invite you to come home and do it by me.
Yeah.
But over here, what can I do? And I don't have wireless, otherwise I'd tell you, come by. I'll do whatever I can to help you. I don't even know what they do here with the internet. The only time I know is when guys complain and I try to help. But I don't know. No, it wasn't a concealed message here, no. Yeah, good that you asked, because I wouldn't have even known that you're entertaining that thought. No. Yeah.
Just an example of why that I'm very fond of bringing up when this subject comes up. So I've had the conversation before with some of my friends, and I used the example of video games. When my friend first bought himself an Xbox 360, my friend's like, wow. watch, I'm going to be a salesman. Today, I'm going to get our friend to buy an Xbox 360. He's like, you got to buy the Xbox 360. It's this, it's that. The guy's like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to buy it, right? So if I see Xbox 360, he's like, and if you have the Xbox 360, you got to buy the HDMI cable. You got to buy the HDMI cable. And he's the guy walks out there with an HDMI cable, Xbox 360, you know, controllers, games, all this, all that, right? he has this Xbox, and he keeps on buying more and more stuff. Also, I noticed what you were just talking about is sometimes when the flesh becomes the focus of our pursuits, we become less interested. And the ironic thing is, we become less interested in those pursuits, too. I noticed this with video games. The more often you play them, you kind of get like kind of bored. You're like, okay, you know, there's other things to do. But if you do it every once in a while, you're like, okay, this is okay, you know?
Tell someone you can't have it. Like you say, you're sending them to prison. Like, and even if you're only going into prison for 2 days, they'll miss those fun things so much. Whereas if you just if you just left them alone and you have the free will to do whatever, they'd probably just sit and read a book, maybe, or not miss those things, not even think about those things. So if you tell us, restrict someone something a little bit, like, say, in Russia, where they have to queue half an hour for a loaf of bread when I was younger, then they're going to miss it. And whereas if you just give people free will, they can just go and do what they want, then some of those people will eventually be mature enough to make the right decisions. Whereas if you're restricting people, then they're never really making the free will decision, are they?
You'll agree with me. I agree with what you're saying, but you'll agree with me that it depends on the circumstance, it depends on the scenario. We all have times when we would rather not be given limitless capacity, meaning give an example, okay? Let's take a guy who had his money in the stock market and the market crashed. Maybe it's not a good idea for him to have a revolver in his hand at that moment. Maybe. Let's take a guy who just lost a relative. Maybe it's not a good idea for him to get behind the wheel at that time. Yeah. I tell grooms not to drive the week of their wedding. Their mind isn't here. There are times when it is, there are times or instances where it's not in our benefit to be given every choice in the world. And it depends on the age, and it depends on our state of being, and it depends on the level of temptation. Meaning, Chazal said, there are certain temptations you should avoid. You're right. We live in the house. And, I'll give you an easy example. If you want to diet, so it's not a good idea to have every type of ice cream that you like in the house. It's not a good idea to have chocolate in the house. There are certain things that it's just not a good idea. You'll tell me, I have free will. Let me exercise free will. Right, but it's also smart to avoid temptation. So that's why if you're going to have internet, it's better to have Internet Rimon or one of the companies that filters. I don't know the companies. Rimon is the name I've seen in advertisements. I don't know which one's better or what. I'm just saying, so that there are times and there are areas where it's not such a good idea to open temptation. And even if a person stands up to temptation 999 times, what happens that one time when it's 2 o'clock in the morning and his mind's a little fuzzy, and he's a little bit upset at things, and he's had a really rough day, and he's a little bit low, and suddenly he's taken by certain temptations. You leave those temptations in front of him, so then you're not doing him a good service.
Why not?
Because the person would tell you, I want to stand up to my temptations, and there are moments of weakness where I'd rather not have to exercise my strongest strengths because we all have moments of weakness. So let's avoid certain temptations.
But the moment of weakness is the issue. The underlying issue is why he's weak is the problem, not the temptation, which is always going to be there. There's going to be some sort of temptation.
Right, but just like the person who has ice cream in the house, if I have to go out and buy it in the store, so I might be able to overcome that temptation. But if it's right here in the fridge, so then I might not be able to overcome that temptation.
But why should it be for someone to decide that?
Well, I'm not saying other people should decide it. I'm saying mature adults should decide it for themselves, but be intelligent about it. And for children, then sometimes the responsibility of the parent is not to put certain temptations in front of them. In every circumstance, that's part of what the parent has to call the shots. Which temptation do I, and which temptation don't I? You know, I'll give you an example.
A lot of big rabbis do.
What do they do?
They dictate what you should avoid and not avoid.
Sometimes, if you want their advice, they'll tell you.
Don't dictate that anyway.
Maybe in their community, they have recommendations. I spoke in my community, and I told parents. I told them about the disasters I've witnessed through the internet, and that my recommendation to them is, if you want, I'll tell you what I told them. I said, okay, you want, I'll tell you the whole story. okay, you already know the punchline, so it's not going to be as effective. But one Friday night, I heard a story, which I'll tell you in a minute. And so I began the speech with the following story. I told them that I was invited to a couple's home to do a circumcision, to do bris milah. And this was a poor couple. They couldn't afford to do it in a shul or an auditorium or anything. It was going to be done at home. And the social worker was going to be there, and the father, and the mother. And they wanted me to come at 3:30 to do the circumcision. So I said, fine. I said, but look, the sun sets at 4:40. So I'll, God willing, I'll be there at 3:30 like you asked, but you have to be ready on time because we don't have too much time to play with. By 4:40, the sun sets, I can't do it anymore. So we have to be done by 4:30. So make sure you're ready on time. If that's the time you want it, fine. Okay, I show up, social worker there, the mother's there, the baby's there. Father's not there. So I asked him what's going on. They said he went out for a smoke. I said, fine, do you want to call him? Yes, they've been calling him. His cell phone's off. It's 3:30, it's 3:40, it's 10 to 4, it's 4 o'clock, it's 4:10. The guy doesn't show up. So I said, look, you're cool, but your mitzvah is to do the bris milah today. If the father's not here, we have a mitzvah to do it. They said, yeah, you bet, you do it now. So at 4:10, I'm doing it. The mother told me to do it. No, the mother told me to do it. It seemed pretty obvious to them that the father was chicken, that he walked out for a smoke and was not planning on being there for his own son's circumcision. So the mother told me, no, you do it now. So fine, I did it. I circumcised the child. I bandaged him up. I give him back to the mother and the nurse. You make the blessings. You name the child. Everything's finished. And the father hasn't come back home yet. It's 10 to 5. Now, you should have heard the crowd muttering. The congregation started talking, what kind of father is that? I'd wring his neck. And I hear the people talking. They're really upset. How could the father miss his own son's bris milah, his own son's circumcision? So I said to them, you know, it's not nice that he missed his own son's circumcision. I don't think anyone would say it's a nice thing to do to his wife, not to be there at her side. And have this moment together, but the kid's going to grow up and he doesn't have to hear about it, and not so terrible. If you ask me, it's far worse when you have a parent that introduces his son to criminals and allows his son to play around with pedophiles and lets his kid do all kinds of dangerous things and he's not with him then. I think that's much more serious than a parent who's not there for a bris. And you know what? If you're giving your kids internet unrestricted, that's what you're doing. Because when your kid is sitting there on MySpace or Facebook, you have no idea who he's in contact with. And the reason I said it that Shabbos was because I had heard just then about a girl from a decent family, grew up with a good education, who came to her parents one day and said, I'm leaving. A girl from that neighborhood. She came and said, I'm leaving. They asked her, what do you mean you're leaving? She says, I'm leaving the house. So they said, where are you going? What do you mean you're leaving the house? She said, well, over the last half a year, I've developed a relationship with someone on the internet, and now I'm going to marry him. Goodbye. Sounds very strange. Do you know how many stories like this happen? Go to 613.org. Go to 613.org and listen to the class by a representative of FBI whose job is to sit online and set up profiles as though he's children and catch the people who try to befriend these kids. So I said to them, so if you're giving your kids free access and you're saying, so I can trust them. What do you mean you could trust them? You could trust a 13-year-old to know that the other 13-year-old might be a 45-year-old pedophile? You can trust your 15-year-old to know who he's in contact with? You know that today the Palestinians are doing this too? There's a... you guys know about that. So,
can I ask, I don't know much about Bismillah. Was the social worker there for you or the baby?
The social worker was accompanying the family.
It was a joke, by the way.
At any rate, back to our Magid Midovna. So that's why you raised the point that giving free choice, I think that that's oversimplifying it. Of course, mature adults have to have free choice, but we also have to realize that there are certain temptations that we're best off if we avoid. And the Magid Midovna says that we if we think about it, then we realize that all those pleasures that are attracting us are vain. And the point which we paused on was when the Magid Midovna said, well, they're not only vain, there's a tremendous lie going on here. And that's where we went off to the discussion of the attractions of the internet and the reason that so many people get duped and attracted and do things that they later on regret when they're surfing the net, because there's that lie that's very attractive. But if we'd think about it for a minute, and we'd see it for what it is, which is a lie, you're not going to marry that girl. You know you're not going to marry that girl. So why are you looking? Because we like to be taken by that lie. But if you think about it, it's not really worth the effort. It's not really worth the price. And even if you get it for free, it's not worth it. And the Magid Midovna says, my whole long speech, the 15 pages we've been discussing, is for people who aren't smart enough to figure it out themselves. But you who are smart enough, gee, you should be able to get to this yourself, to that realization that this isn't what life is about.